compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Good morning, and welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show. I always say welcome back because I feel like we just did this, 21 hours ago. But anyway, we're back, and I invite you to give me a call. My number is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. I received just a few minutes ago on Twitter as I was making my cup of coffee for the show today. I always start the show with a cup of coffee in hand. Lasts me usually about the first hour because, you know, I'm talking all the time. I can't sip my coffee like I'd like to. But I'm here to answer questions, and I got one on Twitter here just a minute ago, and I'm going to find it. I know it's here, and it's from Mike Pedersen. And 8 minutes ago, Mike sent me this message on Twitter. He said, "Patrick, I'm not Catholic, but can I benefit from praying the rosary? I listen to your show daily since Thanksgiving of 2018. That is awesome. Thank you so much for that. First of all, Mike, thank you for listening. I guess I'm not doing my job quite right yet if it's been going on 3 years and you're not Catholic, but hey, sometimes these things take time. But I'm glad you asked the question. So yes, you can certainly benefit from praying the rosary or any prayer for that matter if you are disposed to receive from God what he wants to give you. And the rosary is a very powerful weapon, especially when it comes to invoking the intercession of the Blessed Virgin Mary. As you probably know by now, we Catholics are very insistent upon her role in God's plan of salvation. I have a role, you have a role, she has a role. And her role was explained quite detailedly, that's not even a word, in great detail in the Gospels. So we see her present with Jesus, and I would say that she's the first Christian. The message of Christianity was brought by the angel Gabriel to her first. And what did she do when she said yes to Jesus? She immediately got up to tell other people about it. We're told she got up in haste and went to the hill country of Judea where she visited her kinswoman Elizabeth. And she literally brought Jesus to Elizabeth and to little baby John the Baptist. So I offer those biblical points because there is a great deal there about Mary and her closeness to Jesus. So when we ask her by praying the rosary, as we meditate upon these moments in the life of Christ, so these, as you probably know by now, these are biblical meditations, and most of the prayers of the rosary are themselves taken, in some cases nearly verbatim, from the pages of Scripture. So it's a biblical meditation on Jesus and the things that Jesus said and did. And because Our Lady was present at almost all of those points along the way, and she knew Jesus better than anyone else, she was the closest human person to him, we ask her to pray for us. So when you ask Our Lady to pray for you, she's not going to say, "Gee, I'm sorry, Mike, I'm sorry, you're not a Catholic, it doesn't apply to you." No, she will just as gladly pray for you as she would for anyone else. So I would encourage you to begin praying the rosary. And to make it even easier, we have a section on the Relevant Radio app that will allow you to pray the rosary along with some pre-recorded rosaries. There are many things on the Relevant Radio app, not just programming. This show and all the other shows on Relevant Radio are also archived, so the podcasts of everything are available, with a tap of the screen on the Relevant Radio app. But also, if you go on the right side, so the upper right side has a separate menu, and in that menu, you can access all the different prayers. You click on Pray, and it's got audio prayers, prayer downloads, basic prayers, prayers before Mass, prayers after Mass, devotions, Latin prayers, how to prepare for the sacrament of confession, where to find Masses near you, Mass and Adoration, daily readings, prayer requests. I mean, there's a lot in there. And I myself haven't even fully plumbed the depths of all those benefits on the Relevant Radio app, but I sure do like it, and I would recommend that to you. Thanks for the question, Mike. I appreciate that. 888-914-9149.
Hey, since you're answering, Twitter questions, I've got a couple of Facebook questions that have come in.
Okay, great. Right. I don't have that in front of me, so can you read them to me?
Yeah, I'll just I'll shoot from the hip here. So this is from Beth, and I won't say her last name. Beth Ann, actually. Beth Ann. On the show today, I'm not sure when this was, Wednesday, I guess. On the show on Wednesday, you talked about the interior castle. are there many translations of these writings, and which one do you pick?
Okay, yes to the first question. There are many translations from the original Spanish into English. The one that I first read, and it's the one I have in my library, and I like it, it's by a British translator by the name of E. Allison Pierce, P-E-E-R-S. And he did a fine job with the translation. I mean, I've looked at some of the original Spanish, which is archaic by our standards. She's speaking in a 17th century version of Spanish. So it's not like the kind of Spanish that you would hear on the street someplace today. So his translation, I think, is quite good. Now, are there other good translations? Almost certainly there are. But his is the one that I'm most familiar with. So E. Allison Pierce is the one that I would suggest to you if you're interested in reading it.
Hey, thank you. And how about one more here?
That's the version you have in your back pocket, right, Cyrus? That translation?
I got it right here.
All right. E. Allison Pierce. In for the win.
Just don't ask me what the cover looks like.
Okay.
All right. I have another one from Mary Jo, and she says, "Hi, Patrick. My 10-year-old daughter asked me why we are here. Why did God make all of this world, and why did he put us here? Can you recommend any books or shows to help me explain it to her? Please, thank you, Mary Jo."
Yeah, did Mary Jo say how old the child is?
10 years old.
10 years old. Okay, this is perfect. Okay, I have the perfect resource for you. So I'll answer the question from this resource. This is actually how I learned to answer this question when I was a kid. It's the New St. Joseph Baltimore Catechism. I'll retweet a copy of it if you're interested in seeing it. It has a largely gray cover, a picture of Jesus holding the Bible and pointing to the words, "I am the way, the truth, and the life." So it is a really good, helpful resource for children especially, but it's also good for adults if they want to learn these basics of the faith. So question number three, because it's a question and answer catechism, is why did God make us? And the answer is very simple. I memorized it when I was like in the third grade or whenever I first started with this catechism. Question, why did God make us? Answer, God made us to show forth his goodness and to share with us his everlasting happiness in heaven. Question four is, what must we do to gain the happiness of heaven? To gain the happiness of heaven, we must know, love, and serve God in this world. Question five, from whom do we learn to know, love, and serve God? We learn to know, love, and serve God from Jesus Christ, the Son of God, who teaches us through the Catholic Church. So it's these kinds of granular answers to these questions, and as you go through, you'll find that your child's knowledge of the faith is going to be building the way a building is built. When you lay a good foundation, you can build on it, and the more solid the foundation, the higher you can go. So that's the basic answer. God made us, to put it in a somewhat different way, to know, love, and serve him in this life so that we can be happy with him forever in the life to come. So the purpose of this life is to prepare us for the main event, which is eternity with him. He wants us to be happy. And the preparation for that in this life involves knowing him, listening to him, loving him, responding to him. And the Baltimore Catechism will take you even deeper. So there we have it. Any further Facebook questions?
All right, let's do one more here. Okay. This is great.
I like this. I don't think I've ever done Facebook questions.
We've never done this before. So this is Jared, and he says, "Hi, Patrick. I would like to read more about holy souls in purgatory. What books can you recommend?" And he listens to your show almost every day, and he learns a lot from you. Thank you.
Thank you, Jared. Well, for Jared and the brother of Jared, and anyone else for that matter, I would recommend, first of all, a book that was written by Father F.X. Schupa. I'm sure he probably pronounced it differently. He was a Jesuit priest, wrote this in the early 19th century, if I'm not mistaken. It's called Purgatory. That's just the name of the book, Purgatory. It's published by Tan Books, and the first part of the book covers the biblical teaching of purgatory and takes into account passages such as 1 Corinthians chapter 3, where St. Paul talks about the man who's life has been built on the foundation of Jesus Christ. And when he's judged, his life is revealed by fire. And the fire, it says, tests the quality of the work. Some of the work, St. Paul describes as flammable, wood, hay, and straw. And he says there, and it begins in verse 10, by the way, he says there that the wood, the hay, and the straw are burned off. Now, the good works of his life, the gold, silver, and precious stones, those remain. And presumably those are refined, but they remain. But the flammable bad works, those are all burned away. And he says he suffers loss and will be saved in that he's not in heaven yet. He's not fully saved in that sense of the word. He doesn't see God face to face yet. He says he will be saved, but only as though passing through fire. So that would be one of the passages that this book looks at and considers also from the tradition of the church fathers in the early church. How did they understand these biblical passages that point to or allude to purgatory? And then the better part of the book is spent in recounting stories. I mean, these are real events, but they're chronicled from the lives of the saints and the annals of Catholic history in which Catholics have experienced manifestations from souls who have gone to purgatory. God permits them in some cases to return and to warn people often. And so that's a fascinating book. It'll keep you busy for a while. It's a good thick book, like a good thick steak, if you like steak, and I like steak. Now, there are other books. There's another book called Hungry Souls. That was more recent. It came out within the last, I would guess, maybe 10 years. I believe that's published by St. Benedict Press. You'd have to double check that. And I have that in my library. I read it when it first came out, and I liked it. So I thought it was very helpful as well. So there are two right there. I think we can get started with that one, either one, and you'll find it very helpful. Anyone else, Cyrus?
We have these patient callers.
Yeah.
And I always like hearing from them. So let's do that.
Okay, let's do that. Okay, why don't we say, let's go to Chris in Chandler, Arizona. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Patrick. In church, when we right before communion, we say, "Lord, I am not worthy for you to enter under my roof, but only say the word, and my soul shall be healed." Mm-hmm. The old way was, "Lord, I am not worthy to receive you." I still see it the old way, stubbornly. I don't think it's a problem, and I don't really quite I get the analogy to. They seem similar, but I don't know why the translation got so botched. It seems like, but is it okay that I say it the old way? I'm assuming it is.
Yeah. Well, here's the funny thing: the old way for you is actually a very, very new way. The old way is the way we say it now. So in Latin, it's Domine non sum dignus ut interest sut tectum meum, sed tantum dig verbum et senabitur anima mea. And that literally from the ancient Latin is drawing from the words of the centurion who spoke those words to Jesus. It's, you know, "Lord, I'm not worthy that you should enter under my roof." Sub tectum meum is the Latin phrase for that. "But only say the word and my soul shall be healed." So what you're used to and what we said in English for many years is actually a novelty, and it's a mistranslation of the original. So when the liturgical books were revised and the prayers of the Mass were retranslated, maybe, how long ago was that? Maybe 10 years ago? It's hard to tell now, but you know, we're so used to it now, but it reverted back to the correct translation. So that's the irony, is that what you are fond of, and there's nothing wrong with it. It's just not as accurate. You know, it's not as faithful to Scripture and the ancient teaching. Now, to your question, is it wrong to do that? I don't think it's wrong. I mean, I don't think God is, you know, glaring at you or anything like that. But maybe the question to ask next is, if the church proposes to us to say it in the more accurate way, what would be a good reason to not do that? Now, I recognize if you're accustomed to it a certain way, sometimes it's hard to change that. And I don't think that would be a bad motivation. But if it's just stubbornness or something like that, then maybe you might want to think about that.
Very good. I appreciate it. Thank you for the background.
You got it, Chris. Thank you. Fascinating question. I've never been asked that question before. I think that's a common occurrence here on the program, don't you, Cyrus? Some of the questions that our listeners ask are just,
it's,
as Dr. Spock would say,
fascinating. Or it's...
live long and prosper, Luke.
Or it's the three or four questions that we get, I think, every single day.
About, can I go to a wedding if the Catholic person is getting married outside?
That's the new number one.
That's a very common question.
That's the new number one. And yeah. Do our pets go to heaven?
You're trying to stir the pot right
okay,
now.
Yeah,
aren't
I'll
you?
Stop. Yeah. I'll stop.
I can tell you're stirring the pot because that usually provokes all kinds of emotional responses.
Have an easygoing Friday.
Let's do that. Good idea. Let's go to Lisa. waiting patiently in Davis, California. Good morning, Lisa.
Oh, hi, Patrick, again. So for the question, I'll try to frame it so you can understand what I'm trying to say.
Okay.
So I'm specifically referring to the use of unethical means or methods in research, you know, devising, testing of vaccines, as well as using MasterCards and Visas for the purchasing of things, knowing that full well they donate money to Planned Parenthood, et cetera, et cetera. Now, a side note, what we don't know we're not culpable for, and we try to do research and keep up, but it's almost difficult these days. But so, and then the last thing before the question, it's about conscientious objection.
Okay.
Based on practice. I'm not against, so the question, I object to the practice of these things.
These things being...
Is there a higher moral responsibility for us as Catholics? Which is higher? Caring for our community, the common good, or knowing about these things that are objectionable, fighting against them by not cooperating with them and trying to expose them. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
I think so. I'm not. When you said these things, what are these things in particular? I don't know what that is. Do you mean? I'm not really sure what you mean. So can you clarify that for me?
So I've been really trying to work through this. So I'm just wondering, when will the discussion take place by our church, by us as people, addressing the moral implications and the responsibility of scientists and those creating vaccines and cosmetics and artificial flavorings and all that? And are we as people using MasterCards to make purchases and doing these things, buying from Amazons and trying to do what's right?
I think I have the answer. And I think I understand your question, so you correct me if I'm not getting it right. You're wondering, in our day-to-day lives, how do we navigate around and through situations where there is some kind of connection that we find ourselves in with something that's immoral, and how do we evaluate whether or not we ourselves are doing something immoral by participating at, let's say, some very remote level? Or do we have an obligation to avoid participating? And how do we know which is which? Is that the question?
Yes, with the common good, knowing that, for instance, say that the bishops and we're to love our neighbor, and put our neighbor first as well, and Jesus died for our sins, mm-hmm. and we were the ones. So you can, it's so much deeper. You can go, he died for our sins to save us. Are we asked to make that same sacrifice and say, getting the vaccine, even though we know, even on a remote level, that even though at a remote level it's that we've been given the okay to get it, or to do other things like this, make purchases, trying to avoid making purchases, supporting businesses that maybe don't use moral means.
So I know what you mean. So here's what I'll do, Lisa. I believe I understand your question more clearly now, and since we have to take a break, just stand by, and when we come back, I'll come right back to you and I'll offer you my thoughts. Right after this quick timeout, you're listening to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. This hour is sponsored by Ave Maria Mutual Funds, where financial goals are aligned with pro-life values and fund decisions are based on investment fundamentals designed to preserve and grow wealth without violating moral beliefs. More information at AveMariaFunds.com.
Get connected to the conversation. Call now,
888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
Welcome back. I said it before the lady was done talking. Did that go out over the air, Cyrus, when I said that? Okay, thank you. Thanks for having my back. Okay, we're going to come back to you, Lisa, in Davis, California. And for the benefit of people who are just tuning in right now and didn't hear your question, you and I were talking about how is it that we can go through life and deal with everyday situations using MasterCard or where we shop or what we buy, knowing that in some or even many cases, there's some kind of connection with something immoral. Very often it has to do with abortion, companies who donate money to big abortion kind of thing. How do we know when, on the one hand, it is an act or something that we should not do because it would involve us at a deeper level? Or how can we tell when it's okay to do it, knowing that there's still some kind of connection there? And where are the lines? How do we know if we've crossed the lines? And I think that was the gist of it. Does that sound right to you?
Yes. And then adding in, more importantly, I think, our responsibility to take care of our fellow brothers and sisters.
The common good.
The common good versus objecting to the practice of these things. When I object to the practice of these things, and is there a higher moral obligation on the part, maybe it's just up to each person individually's conscience, but is there a higher, which is higher, obligation morally to take care of the common good, mm-hmm, by perhaps getting a vaccine that you object to the means and the methods used to create it, to develop it, to test it.
Yeah. So is your question, Lisa, is your question really about vaccines? Is that what you're asking about?
Well, first and foremost, it is.
Okay, I kind of thought so. all right, well, the same principles apply. So at least we have, you know, at least it's a little bit clearer that way. Okay,
but
so
the other things, but it's first and foremost that, yeah.
Got it, because, you know, that's on everybody's mind. Understandable. All right, so a few principles. Number one, we can never do something evil for a good goal. The means do not always, or I'm sorry, the ends do not always justify the means. Sometimes they do, but very often they don't. So an analogy that I've thought of before is that, you know, it's a very good thing to feed homeless people, but you can't kill a man to steal his money to use the money to feed the poor people, or you can't rob a bank to get money to feed poor people. The goal is good, but the means to that end is not good. So as a principle, we can't proactively do something that is in itself immoral for a good goal. Now, the question of vaccines or using your MasterCard, even though MasterCard donates money to Planned Parenthood, or getting on a national airline to take a trip, or buying a cup of coffee. These are all examples of where you are participating, but it's at a very remote level, number one, because the action that is objectionable morally is so far down the line, and you're not participating in it directly. The second thing to keep in mind is, you're not doing something that is itself intrinsically evil. And this is a key distinction that must be made. There's nothing intrinsically evil about buying a cup of coffee or purchasing something and putting it on your credit card. Although the people who might want to debate the question of usury, they might have a different perspective on that. But let's just talk about buying cups of coffee, for example. So that's not in itself an immoral act. So that doesn't fall under the category of you can't do something evil for a good goal, because buying a cup of coffee is not evil. It's morally neutral. So that further, I think, decomplicates this issue. Now, if you were bombing or in some other way destroying places where they're giving vaccines, that would not only not be a good goal, it would also be the wrong means to that goal. That would be where you're actively doing something that is itself wrong. So getting a vaccine, number one, does not fall into the category of doing something immoral, because getting a vaccine is not itself immoral. The question here is this vaccine something that you shouldn't get because there may have been some immoral things done either in the derivation of the vaccine or in its testing or in some other fashion? And this is where the church has told us, and you alluded to this at the beginning, the bishops, even at the Vatican level itself, have said, this: you're not doing anything immoral by receiving a vaccine. Now, your question about the common good, it plays into this, obviously. And here is where I find it a bit, you know, odd that for an illness that 98%, you know, and the figure is like 98.2 or 97.9 or whatever it is, let's just say 98%, 98% or more of the people, if they get it, they get it, and it's over and done with. They won't die from it. It's not like a disease that lays waste to populations, like cholera, for example, or Ebola or something like that, that can indeed kill huge numbers of people. The mortality rate is very high. This is not like that. So that's one of the complicating factors, it seems to me, Lisa, and that is with this strong emphasis on getting a vaccine, herd immunity, and all these things. And I understand that, and I don't object to it personally, but it seems to be exaggerated for something that is not, for the vast majority of people, is not a lethal threat. For some people, yes. But for most people, to the tune of something like 98%, it's not. So now we have the question of, is it really necessary for the common good to get vaccinated? And what about all the people, you know, we're talking now in the United States, probably in the area of maybe 100 million people in the United States. And that's just a guess on my part. But, you know, at least tens of millions and maybe 100 million people have already gotten COVID. So they have the antibodies. And the question is, if you've already gotten it, and, you know, the research seems to indicate that you can't easily get it again, well, then that raises another question. Well, then why isn't a vaccination necessary for those people? And the thinking, as I understand it, Lisa, is that, well, let's just get everybody vaccinated. That way we don't have to worry about it. And it's cleaner that way, and we know exactly that everybody has been vaccinated. So I'm not here to argue with scientists. I'm not a scientist. I'm not here to argue with physicians, not being a physician myself. So I try to ask questions just like you're doing. But the one thing I do know is that the church says to us that if we get these vaccines, we are not ourselves doing anything evil. And we should also raise our voices to try to push back against the pharmaceutical companies who are using aborted fetal stem cells for all kinds of research, not just for this one. We do have an obligation to continue speaking up about that. But because this is not something that you're doing that is itself immoral, and the whatever connection there may have been with using aborted fetal stem cells is so remote from you, that even under just normal Catholic moral ethical principles applied to anything, you would be in the clear. And I suppose I'm sort of repeating myself now. I hope that answers your question. Does that get to the heart of what you're asking me?
Yes, mostly. And I thank you, because that helps so much. And it's for me, it's I have written those companies, I have done what, and I want to be obedient to the church. However, it's just I'm not getting past, and I won't probably get past, and it's fine. You've helped me clarify. It's internalizing that vaccine that's the bottom line for me. Mm-hmm. It's like it's a deeper involvement. It's a deeper cooperation that way. Mm-hmm. However, I do understand, and I agree with everything you said, and you've helped me, and I'll just keep praying about it. And this is just seems like it's something that's going to be going on and on with variants and new vaccines and boosters and blah, blah, blah. But thank you. And Cyrus and Patrick, a very loved cat will purr. One that feel okay. So you know, no need to spend money on that research because I know I'm a cat person. So
the very loved cat will purr. Got it. Well, Lisa, thank you so much, and let me send you off with a suggestion for further reading. It's called Life Issues, Medical Choices. And it came out, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago. So it has nothing whatsoever to do with COVID-19. But it's a very helpful book that parses out all kinds of situations, just like this one. And I think there's actually a chapter on vaccines that are in some way connected with aborted fetal stem cells. And it's called Life Issues, Medical Choices. The authors are Dr. Janet Smith and Dr. Chris Kazor. They're not medical doctors. They're PhDs. But this is a book of moral theology. So they go through about 50 different scenarios, this being one of them. And they lay it all out. And what's being said now is no different from what they said in that book 10 years ago. I think some people think that maybe the rules are being bent now in a way that they weren't before. And that's actually not the case. And I think this book will help to demonstrate that. I also recommend, Lisa, the National Catholic Bioethics Center. We have their, I believe he's the director, Father Tad Pahalchik. We have him on Morning Air fairly frequently, and their website is ncbcenter.org. They have lots of information about all of these things for your further reading. Thank you. I appreciate it. Let's go now to Carol, listening in California. Hi, Carol.
Hello, Patrick. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I have a question. I have several grandchildren that are in the 20-something age bracket, and it's come to my attention rather directly recently, and I've wondered about it in previous years, that they don't go to Mass every Sunday. But when they do come together as a family or in certain circumstances, baptisms and things like that, they do go up and get Holy Communion. Mm-hmm. And it breaks my heart to think that they are piling on serious sin in a situation like that. And I would like to have a conversation with them, but I'm not exactly ready to, I don't have the right words right now or the right position to take. I know what I personally believe, but how to transfer that belief to them and make them aware of the choices that they're making for their own soul.
Yeah, it is troubling, especially because you love them so much and you don't want them to go down a path that will eventually, you know, lead them away from God if it's not already doing so. So how do you do it? Well, there are a number of things you could do. You could just remind them gently, hey guys, boy, I sure wish you were, you know, practicing your faith, but for as long as you're not, I just want to remind you that if you're not going to confession and if you're not living your faith, you're racking up some sins. We all have a habit of doing that if we're not careful. And I just want to remind you that when you receive Holy Communion, that's actually spiritually harmful for you because it's a sin of sacrilege. And if you wanted to share with them what St. Paul talks about in 1 Corinthians chapter 11, the second part of the chapter, he makes it really clear that if somebody is receiving the body and the blood of the Lord unworthily, that he is eating and drinking judgment or damnation on himself. He says, if somebody doesn't recognize the body, he's eating and drinking damnation unto himself. And if somebody receives unworthily, then he's guilty of the body and the blood of the Lord. So that's a euphemism for murder. So without maybe putting too fine a point on it, you could send them a link to that passage or just say, here's a place where the Bible talks about this, and I, you know, I love you, and I care for you, and I want to make sure that you are happy, and doing this is not going to make you happy. It's going to make matters worse. So in your own words, I would suggest maybe sharing that with them. Then, what do you do next? Probably nothing other than pray for them. But if you said your piece, I mean, because otherwise you run the risk of becoming a nag. In their eyes, not in mine, but in their eyes, they might think of you as a nag. They might avoid talking to you about this because they don't want to hear it for the umpteenth time. So that's another part where we have to be patient and know that if you've said it and they know it, you don't need to say it again and again and again. And then pray for them and ask God to send somebody into their lives. If you're not the person they'll listen to, ask God to send somebody into their lives who they will listen to. And maybe that is how they will get turned around.
I appreciate that very much. I was caught between just saying it once and repeating it. So this is nice to know that you suggest really just making it very clear one time. And I have jumped from praying for them on a daily basis for whatever they're going through, but to pray for the salvation of their souls, because I realize that everybody's journey through life is different, and to expect them to be on the same level or at the same point in their faith as I am or as other people are is an unrealistic expectation. But it just breaks my heart to witness.
I know, and I understand it, and you have my complete empathy and sympathy, Carol. Thank you. Well, keep doing what you're doing. God bless you. I'll be right back with more right after this.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
We're back in a big way. Thank you for listening to the Patrick Madrid Show. The number is 888-914-9149. We have a line or two available, so call now. Let's go next to Carlos, waiting patiently in Belen, New Mexico. Hello, Carlos.
Patrick, my question is about yesterday. I was talking to my dad, and I let him know that we couldn't have more of the serious conversations if he was drinking. Like, mm-hmm. It's kind of something I learned as a boundary type of thing. Mm-hmm. With us, so, maybe because our relationship, it could, and then I had a big argument with him last week about the vaccine and things, and I got a bit off. I lost control a little bit myself, and but my mm-hmm. question is, if by letting him know this, did I sin against the commandment, you shall honor your father and your mother?
I don't get the impression that you did, for this reason, that if your dad was drunk and, you know, there's no point in trying to have a conversation with him because he's impaired, and you tell him so, you're telling him the honest truth. Now, I suppose you could be brutal about that, but you sound like a mild-mannered guy. Were you brutal about it, or were you just saying, hey, Dad, we can't talk right now because you're impaired by alcohol?
We got back into the conversation. We started talking about what had happened the week before when I lost control. And
what do you mean you lost control? Verbally, physically? How did you lose control?
Verbally, and maybe a little physically. I threw an onion at him. An onion I had. I was preparing burgers, getting ready to make some burgers, and I had a piece of onion. He was trying to have a conversation about 100 feet away from where I was preparing the burgers, and that's part of where I pointed out that was not a good way to have a conversation if he's 100 feet across the room. And
did
I have to raise my voice.
Did you hit him with... Did the onion make contact?
It flew above his head. It flew above his head.
I could just picture.
And yeah.
All right.
And
so
the other part
you lost.
Of it was,
go ahead.
Is also if what was the other part?
Well, let me focus on this part for right now. I'm not sure what to tell you. We all lose our temper. Yes, we all regret saying things or even perhaps doing things later. I'm not sure what to make of this. I was drunk. You were throwing onions. He was 100 feet away shouting at you. It sounds like quite a circus was going on at that point. So my advice, number one, would be don't physically raise your hand against your father, even if he's doing something, you know, that's mean-spirited towards you. My advice would be the best way to enforce that boundary is just remove yourself from the situation. I'm sorry, Dad, this is not good. I'm going home. It's one way to handle it. But I would say if you're worried about if you've physically threatened your dad or physically raised your hand against him, yeah, I think that would fall into the category of not honoring your father and mother because you don't need to do that. Now, if he was crazy out of his mind and attacking somebody and you grabbed him and pulled him off the person he was attacking to prevent him from hurting somebody, that's not the same kind of thing. But if you are in some way using physical force against him, I think that would be in the area of at least venially sinful in that commandment to honor your father and mother. But I don't think so based upon if he's out of his mind with alcohol and you're trying to have a conversation and you realize you can't do it and just tell him, I can't talk to you right now. That's not a sin. You know, that's a statement of fact. So I would try to separate out those two issues.
Okay.
I hope that helps,
the
Carlos.
Other part now.
Okay.
Okay. And letting him know that I detach myself from him, at least negatively. Not so much like you're not my father anymore or nothing like that, but just detaching from him negatively because of
what does that mean?
The effects. Well, it I guess because I get real emotional with him, and it's I get real emotional and it seems like I'm attached that way, so I want to detach. So that it doesn't affect me negatively. And I let him know that I was going to do that.
Yeah, you can do that. You can do that. In other words, if you find yourself agitated and who knows what else, because you're around him, especially when he's been drinking and things always go south, you're not committing a sin by saying, Dad, I just can't come around here anymore. Or at least I can't come around here as often as I have been. And let's let things simmer down. And maybe we can get back to normal later. But for right now, I've just got to check out for a while. That's not sinful. You know, you're forestalling a bad situation by removing yourself from the picture. So honoring your father and mother involves when you're younger and under their direct authority, you obey them. You are respectful to them. You do what they ask you to do. When you get older, those things take a somewhat different form. You're not obligated. If your dad says, no, I don't want you to work there, you don't have to take his advice. You have the freedom as an adult to do what you want to do. So that is not encompassed by the commandment. But physical respect to your father, or put it the other way, physical disrespect to your father, that would certainly be against the commandment. Shouting at him, abusing him verbally, being really mean-spirited toward him, I think those two would all fall into that category. And you may say, yeah, but he was drunk and he was being mean to me. That's where I would say just walk away from it. You know, don't give him or yourself the opportunity to go any further down that road. Well, those are my thoughts, Carlos. I hope that's helpful. And I hope you guys can patch things up. Let's go to Carol now in Toms River, New Jersey. Hi, Carol.
Hi, Kay. Hi, how are you doing? Listen, I called because I wanted to know who said the world will end where it began. And with all the problems right now in Jerusalem, I'm wondering, does that mean the world is coming to an end very soon? All the bombing and killing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know whether or not we're living in the end times. It's possible. And there are some days when I really tend to think that, gosh, maybe we are living in the end times. But I don't know. And Israel has been on fire before. The Seven-Day War was it 1967, 68, whatever it was? And Israel was attacked from all sides, and in 7 days it won. So it's been at war before. We've seen these things before, as terrible as they are. We don't like to see them, but you know they've happened before. Does this mean, yeah, 1967, thank you, Cyrus. The Seven-Day War, June 5th to June the 10th. But anyway, as far as your question is concerned, Carol, there's no way to know whether or not we're in the end times. So my advice is just live your life as you know you should. Focus on the things that are important. Stay close to Jesus. Receive the sacrament. Be a good mom, good wife, good whatever your state in life is. Because eventually the world will end for you and for me individually, and that's probably much more likely to happen for all of us as individuals before we see the end of the world. But I find that people who, and I don't say this about you, Carol, I don't know if it's true of you or not, but people who feed on a steady diet of the latest crisis or the latest outrage or the latest terrible thing that's going on, it's easy to lose your sense of equilibrium and to become fearful. And I know you don't want that. You know, we have to pay attention to the signs of the times and not despise prophecy and test all things and hold fast to that which is good. But we also should be focused on what is really important and let those other things take their course. I like how Jesus put it, obviously. He said, you know, you can't add an hour to your life by worrying. You can't change the color of the hair on your head by worrying. I'm paraphrasing. So why worry? There's plenty to worry about for today, but why worry about tomorrow? There's no need for that.
What I wanted to say, though, was who said that, Patrick? The world will end where it began.
Could not tell you. I don't know. Jesus didn't say that. And, you know, what does that mean exactly? Where the world began? Well, the world began in space. You know, God created the universe, and eventually this planet coalesced over eons of time, and then God created life on it. So is it referring to that? I don't know. St. Peter says that everything in the universe itself, will be dissolved with fire. But that's not the quote you're talking about.
No.
Yeah. Maybe Google that and see what you come up with. Yeah. If I were you, I would Google it, and it probably will be attributed to somebody. Anyway, well, thank you, Carol. I appreciate that. It's nice chatting with you. Now we'll go to Michael, listening in Rancho Bernardo, California, a town I know well. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Patrick. Just want to say I'm a longtime listener. Really appreciate the work that you do.
Thank you.
All the way back to Immaculate Heart Radio, and you're on with Patrick Coffin. I remember those days well.
Thank you. I was almost never on with Patrick Coffin. He was on Catholic Answers Live for years, and I was very rarely on with him. I mean, a few times I was, but more commonly I would... No, I take that back. You're right. I was on with him as a guest, now that I think about it. But I also filled in for him. In fact, I'll tell you a funny Patrick Coffin story here when you're done with your question, Michael.
Sure, sure. And no, I just want to say I really appreciate your work standing in defense of the Catholic faith, and listen to you regularly. And so my question is, my sister, former Catholic, no longer practicing, is in a committed same-sex relationship with her partner, and the two of them have recently become engaged and now want to have children. My wife and I are practicing Catholics and have four young daughters ourselves, and obviously stands in direct contradiction to our Catholic belief and faith. And Patrick, I got to say, I'm really in a quagmire because I don't know the best way to approach this and to tell our children and explain to them what their aunt isn't intended to do. So
how old are the kids?
That, please. Well, we've got a 6-year-old, 3-year-old, 2-year-old, and now a 2-month-old. So
okay.
A 6-year-old.
These
in
are
particular.
Just little children. Yeah. Well, it's a shame that you're put in a situation where you have to tell them about things that are not age appropriate for them. They should not have to know about these issues. So my advice would be to shield them from it as much as you can and tell them as little as you need to. And, you know, if they're asking, well, how come we're not going over to their house? I doubt your 6-year-old would even ask you that question.
Sure.
Just say,
So we've got a pretty large family, a lot of siblings. We all get together at family barbecues events, you know, pretty regularly. We all live close by. They're obviously looking to have in vitro fertilization. One of them will become pregnant. And so you know, is the kid 6, 7, 8 years old? You know, how is Auntie pregnant? You know, how's this happening?
Mm-hmm.
That's really more in line with my question.
Okay. Well, in that case, you can do a couple things. You could say, you don't need to know that right now. When you get older, I'll tell you. But for right now, you don't need to know. What they're doing is not right. Mom and I don't agree with it, but it's not something you need to know about right now. That's what I would tell an 8-year-old. I would not tell an 8-year-old how this aunt of hers got pregnant. I wouldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when she's 12, sure. 12, 13, sure. She's old enough to begin knowing about things like that. But at 8 years old, no. So I just wouldn't tell her.
Sure, sure. Well, no, that's absolutely where we're going too with it. It's just, you know, we obviously say, we tell them, you know, you're a girl, you grow up, you'll marry a boy, you know, things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just kind of like, well, what's going on with them?
Right. You can say, well, they're doing something that God does not approve of, and we love them and we pray for them, but we don't agree with what they're doing. Sorry you're in this situation, Michael. Thanks for calling. I'll be right back with hour two right after this.